Welcome to Fair Shake, a podcast by Griffith University Communication for Social and Environmental Change students. Each episode, students tackle a different issue of social or environmental change that matters to them. So sit back, relax, and enjoy Fair Shake.
Hi, I'm Joshua McGuinness, and this is Fair Shake. Today, I delve into the early 2022 Northern Rivers floods and the impacts on my local marine and coastal environments. This devastating natural disaster that left thousands of people and wildlife displaced, uprooted ecosystems, and claimed many lives. This episode, we delve into the true cost of this natural disaster on the marine ecosystems of northern New South Wales, 6 months on. I spoke to several local representatives in the community to understand and paint a rather glaring picture of the true impact of the devastating disaster. My intention with this piece was not to be pessimistic, but to create dialogue and offer a platform to shed light on a rather unknown aspect of the floods. I want this episode to hopefully provide insight on exactly what this scale of natural phenomenon can have on an environment and the ecosystems that live off it. Being a Gen Z myself, I know that these issues are what my generation has a stake in. It's what we care about. Climate change is arguably the most discussed of them all. My generation understands the importance of these ecosystems and why their protection and maintenance is beneficial for all living things. But we also know that the effects of climate change that we are seeing played out in these catastrophic weather events is only going to get worse before it gets better. I think my community in the Northern Rivers knows this reality all too well. So much of my community lives on floodplains and flood-prone areas. We know that our coastal environments will be hit first when these weather effects occur. This brings up two issues. Not only will it have an impact on the wildlife itself, but our Northern Rivers community has such a unique relationship with the surrounding natural ecosystems. This area relies on tourism, and the use of these ecosystems is a primary source of income for our region. We saw this back during the peak of the pandemic when tourism was brought to a halt and huge number of businesses and livelihoods were uprooted. Although we are also equipped with some of Australia's most dedicated and skilled conservationists and have a community that both takes and gives back by protecting these eco-environments. Byron Wildlife Hospital was one of the first services to spring into action during the crisis in February. This organisation is well respected in my community, and I was lucky enough to speak with Dr. Chantelle Witten, the associate vet at the Mobile Hospital. Their dedicated teams acted as frontline workers for injured and displaced animals and were the very first to see the effects of the flooding on local wildlife. I wanted to start by painting a picture of the state of wildlife both during and after the flooding and really examine what this looks like today.
So initially, in the first couple of days of the floods, we didn't really see anything. We might have seen a few birds that were waterlogged, so literally swollen with water because they just, it's like they'd been in the bath for 72 hours and they just kind of swelled. Then it wasn't until, a few days to weeks to even months later that we started to see wildlife coming in.
The displacement of wildlife during the flooding was one of the most tragic and well-documented aspects of the floods. Most people with television and social media would have seen the footage of cows on rooftops and other native Australian species that had been washed into foreign environments.
A lot of the time it was animals that were appearing in areas that they shouldn't have been. So bearded dragons on the beach, freshwater turtles on the beach that have been washed down in currents. We saw a lot of echidnas that were displaced because their homes had been flooded. And we did see, not so much at the beginning, but a lot of marine turtles and sea snakes as well that are coming in now. I think we saw a lot more trauma cases. So a lot of the larger birds, they came in with quite severe fractures just from, I think, the storms and just probable traffic accidents and things like that. I think the ongoing effects we don't know because we've never had floods as serious as this before.
I guess when we think of long-term impacts of these floods, it's really hard for sort of any community to grapple with what the road looks like ahead. For the wildlife in the Northern Rivers, they have experienced the devastation of these floods before. This is not a new event. However, it was unprecedented and it was the worst we've seen before. But how do you measure that impact? Without long-term research, it's very hard to identify exactly what long-term effects can be a direct link to the flooding. In fact, most researchers that I spoke to couldn't give a clear picture of what they expected and what they thought was a direct impact of the flood and what wasn't. The best information we have is from those who work closely on the ground with these animals, these wildlife and these ecosystems, and can identify discrepancies in their behaviour and injuries.
I think we're seeing a lot of echidnas still that are underweight, quite stressed, and have potential skin issues, parasites and hair loss that are potentially related to being able to find food or having, you know, adequate nutrition. And as for the sea turtles, it's I think going to be a really troubling year moving forward. And I think that the carers at Australian Seabird and Turtle Rescue are predicting that it's not going to be, they're not going to have as much success with rehabilitating their turtles just because of the condition that they're coming in at.
We know that turtles were one of the hardest hit during the floods, but speaking with Chantelle exposed a harsh reality to me about the true cost that this disaster has had on those species. It has only emphasised to me how our most vulnerable really are the most impacted as a result of climate change and the increasingly volatile weather patterns.
Well, I think that the big thing moving forward is going to be the sea turtle rehabilitation. And we do know from general conversations with people that spend a lot of time diving or snorkeling out at seal rocks that the Byron Bay population of sea turtles is generally in pretty poor condition. And there's a lot of factors that are contributing to this. There's disease processes that have been going on for a while, like turtle herpes virus. And then that's been impacted with changes in salinity of the water and also massive amounts of silt that has been, you know, dumped into the ocean from rivers, which is just impacting their food sources. And that doesn't improve overnight.
I think this is a major reason I wanted to create this piece in the first place. So much of what people see is not the reality, especially for those who don't live in this community. They see a re-emerging tourism industry, thriving whale season with blue waters and sunny days, but it just isn't the full picture, and it is so easy to assume on surface level that everything is back to normal. But a lot of our native wildlife and ecosystems can't just recover in a matter of months. Unlike houses that can be rebuilt and livelihoods that can sort of get back on their feet again, the long-term effects on our wildlife's habitats and their food sources can take a toll that can last much longer, years, if not more.
The biggest problem is going to be seen with our marine life, I think, and all the pollution and rubbish that's been washed into the ocean. How do we, you know, monitor that? How do we, hopefully there's people out there that are looking at these sorts of things, and we just see the animals when they're brought into us, emaciated, anemic, covered in parasites, and it's very difficult sometimes to work out what's going on with them.
Through my own research, I found so many countless stories around the displacement of turtles in my local area and the stark reality that plastic pollution was having on the waterways. Prior to the flooding, I had started to notice an increase in microplastics on my local beaches. I would be bringing a small bag down and collecting little pieces of plastic on my afternoon walk. Fast forward to after the flooding event, the state of my local beaches was unlike anything I'd ever seen before. I'm from Casuarina, New South Wales, which is about 20 minutes from Byron Bay, and the sheer level of plastic pollution that had inevitably been washed up on shore was quite overwhelming and confronting. I think the worst of it came a few weeks later when that plastic level had decreased from over half from what I'd observed the previous weeks. Unfortunately, I knew straight away that this wasn't a good sign. In fact, it was sort of terrifying to me. Due to the nature of tides, microplastics don't just get stranded on shore forever. Most are washed out to sea with the high tide, meaning these small microplastics that had just previously littered the shoreline just a few weeks back had now become part of an ever-growing problem for our marine life and our food source as consumers of fish. The harsh reality of this issue is that it's almost impossible to measure the direct impact of the plastic pollution from the floods. But with the research we have on the plastic pollution and its effect on sea life, I'm able to make a pretty highly likely hypothesis that the sheer level of plastic debris that I saw myself and that entered the local waterways will likely cause significant impacts on the long-term scale. Chantelle put it pretty perfectly, so I'll play a clip from her now.
It might look pretty, the water might still be crystal clear, but things are not changing rapidly.
When we talk about the marine ecosystems in the Northern Rivers and the impacts of the floods, I think a lot of people really overlook the impacts on our reef. The Northern Rivers regions have some of the most diverse and incredible tropical species that live among the reefs and rely on them. These living organisms are rarely given news coverage. In fact, I don't really think I've seen a single mention of it. But these environments are so important to my local area and are so special to me. There is something so inspiring and grounding about being among these foreign alien environments. I also spoke to Dr. Maria Baker, an associate professor working with Leeds University. Maria works on reef ecology and conservation and is a regular diver and researcher monitoring coral and fish colonies in the reef environments off the Northern Rivers coastline. Her and her team recently dived across multiple islands off the coast and uncovered some really troubling observations about the reefs as they are months on from the floods.
So from my personal impressions and those of my colleagues, I would say that it's pretty clear that the coral communities are being hammered by something, but most likely the input influx of fresh water and maybe pollutants and sediments coming in from the floods. That would be a likely guess. There was a lot of evidence of disease in the corals. My colleague Bridget Summer from UTS in Sydney, she's our coral expert who's been doing the coral surveys for our project, and so she almost came up from every dive commenting on how the corals looked very diseased, like full of impacts of visible, you get like these black bands that travel across the coral, and also just generally diseased patches.
Maria mentioned it is difficult to know without having analysed the data whether it is a direct impact of the floods or whether there is alternative issues causing these diseases.
And so that seems to indicate maybe sediment smothering in parts of it, but not all of it. So some parts survived, whereas others were smothered for long enough that they didn't make it. It's not clear to me whether it's just purely the sediment affecting the colonies or whether there's other processes going on whereby maybe there's a pollution effect. The runoff contains chemicals and maybe heavy metals and compounds that normally don't get make it to the reef but would in the flooding.
Through my conversation with Maria, I reminisced on the water quality after the floods, and it really struck a direct chord with me. Looking at my community during the first few months post-flood, it took months for the water to run clear. Our beautiful waters, which often are a part of many people's identities in this local region, were unable to be used for swimming or surfing at the advice of the local council. The level of pollutants and unknown chemicals that had contaminated the coastal waters was really damaging and confronting. It was difficult to stomach the impact on the marine life that lived just off the coast and how severe that would be. It is only now, 6 months on, that we are really getting a slightly less murky outlook on the reefs and the habitats and organisms that exist and rely on them.
Well, the fish communities this year, generally speaking, were quite temperate. There wasn't very many tropical species there. I can't say why that is. It might well be an after effect of the flooding. It's maybe fair to say that if the reef is smothered with low visibility, high sediment loads for a long period of time, that would also affect the fish.
Speaking to Maria, it is still so unclear and so much is unknown. Our data and research is still very limited, and the long-term impact on our coastal environments is still largely a mystery to the people who study this for a living, let alone young Gen Z like me. There is so much still to be discovered and uncovered about how these weather events really do impact in the long term. But it is not all negative. Just as we humans adapt and change to these conditions, so can the reef.
The reef is not dead, so there is a lot of coral still there, and even a diseased coral is not dead yet. Maybe we don't know that much about how they recover, but there's certainly still a lot of corals there. They've experienced a lot of mortality in general without killing off everything, and there seems to be a lot of disease this year that was previously not there.
It is so important to communicate this correctly. The reef is not dead. We know this. While corals and the reef have been affected and seen the detrimental effects of the floods, These affected areas can recover in time. Our biggest threat to the recovery is the frequency and intensity of these weather events that are predicted to occur in the near future. Something really interesting that Maria mentioned to me is that there is a highly likely possibility that the reef will begin to alter its shape in terms of what corals exist within it. As our weather events become more apparent and the Northern Rivers is impacted by these flooding events more frequently, the reefs will need to adapt to overcome these conditions that they face more regularly. Fragile corals unable to withstand the effects of the sedimentation and just the general effects of the floods themselves will likely decline in these areas, while the hope is that newer adaptive species will flourish.
Of course we want to be optimistic. Of course we want to say, well, let's hope the corals recover. And nature recovers, corals will recover, but it will change the face of the reef most likely. And if there's more of those events this year, then, you know, that it could get worse.
Our climate is getting warmer and our storm systems are growing much stronger. With weather systems expected to get worse in the coming months, it is placing a lot of stress on my local community, who are still picking up the pieces of their lives and trying to rebuild from February and March. This is a human issue as much as it is an ecosystem and wildlife issue. These weather events are non-discriminatory and upheave entire ecosystems.
I don't have to tell you that this is probably due to climate change, and climate change affects reefs in many ways. And one of them is sediment loads of repeated flooding. Perhaps worse is the thermal stress that also comes with climate change. And that we saw in 2016, where we had a massive bleaching event that even affected the high latitudes. If the reef gets hit every year or very regularly, then it's very difficult to be optimistic in the face of that.
If we look at the Bureau of Meteorology, they issued a third warning of a La Nina event this coming spring and summer. They elaborated that sea surface temperatures have been cooling since June and are at a La Nina threshold. We know this is bad news for flood risks in my community. This community that has withstood so much pain and loss, to see these environments be devastated for a third time in a matter of 2 years would be shattering. We also know that the impact that consistent and relentless battering of our coastlines has on the water and the reefs. These coastal environments take time to recover, and they can't do this under constant stress from heavy weather events and the destructive debris and sediment that they bring with them. Speaking to Maria about her team's recent dive, it is pretty clear that the conditions are unlike previous years and are gradually worsening, making diving much more difficult, particularly this year.
This year was really different. It was what we normally do in 2 weeks. We didn't get finished in 4 weeks. There was constantly like bad weather, storm systems going through, and the flooding at the end just to top it off. And that was quite unusual and indicates maybe of some of the issues to come, right? That our climate system is completely messed up.
When I spoke to academic and marine ecology expert Anne Leach, she provided some key insights into exactly how climate change and the storm systems can be linked. It is important to uncover the nuances of this disaster to truly get a scope of the unique ways that our marine and coastal ecosystems have been directly impacted, past, present, and future, as a result of climate change. When we think about the floods, we often see the displaced animals and rehabilitation efforts. But during my interview with Anne, she raised an interesting point that I mulled over for quite a while after the call had ended. It is spring where I live, as I record this episode, and it is heavily raining in my local area as we speak, and we are also on constant high flood alert. It is interesting how we may see a broader picture on the news, but if you look closely, the challenges being faced by the wildlife continue to play out as a direct impact of the destruction on their habitat 6 months on.
We've got this heavy rainfall event now, and it's spring, so lots of, you know, lots of birds having chicks, and their breeding season is happening for a lot of animals now. And so if you've got these vulnerable animals being born, for some animals they might lose a whole breeding season. If you only produce one lot of young a year and it's going to be flooded out this weekend, that might be it for this season. It's going to be really variable on an already quite stressed system.
At the end of the day, we still know so little about the long-term impacts of our climate variations. We are only experiencing the very beginning of what a very small rise in global temperatures can cause. The future repercussions of further rising temperatures can be catastrophic for our natural ecosystems. Each individual organism, particularly in an area as biodiverse as the New South Wales East Coast, will be affected in a unique way, respective to their way of life.
We've talked a lot extensively across the public discourse about these broad sweeping changes, but within those broad sweeping changes, there's a whole microcosm of stories of individual impacts. And even on an individual animal, there's so many different nuances to how the climate is going to affect them in the future. So you add up all those different impacts to a very complicated picture that it's hard to actually predict what's going to happen.
As it is apparent through the dialogue I've had with people in my own community that specialise in this area, it is a very unknown reality. The water is running clear and the tourism is mainly back to normal. But if you hold a microscope to the northern rivers, you see a vastly different picture to the highlight reel portrayed on the screen. Each individual ecosystem that relies on the marine coastline has been affected by these floods. Each individual organism has had to face unique challenges relative to the way their environment was impacted. Marine life have lost parts of their reefs and habitats and have gained enormous volumes of plastic pollutants. Seabirds and coastal wildlife have been displaced from their natural environments and stranded in foreign terrain. All of this is occurring while battling diseases, injury, and infection directly from the upheaval of waste and toxicity in the water. These impacts may seem like short-term problems, but their impact can have long-standing effects on the species if not adequately monitored. My local Northern Rivers community have a key strength in their dedication to these species and their conservation. It is vital now more than ever in this community to be aware of the continuing effects in their own backyard, but also for those outside this community to be aware of the true cost. There will always be room for help, for donations, and for education. Our natural environment is strong, but we have a responsibility to maintain and care for the sacred land we're on. If you have gained new insight from this episode and would love to hear more about the conservation efforts, the Byron Bay Wildlife Hospital is always seeking donations to continue their life-saving veterinary work. You can make a donation via their website and be a part of rebuilding the natural environment I and so many others call home.
This has been Fair Shake, a podcast produced by Griffith University Communication for Social and Environmental Change Project students. Fair Shake is produced on the unceded lands of the Yagara and Turrbal people in Meanjin and also on Combermary and Yugambeh lands. We pay our respect to elders past, present and future and recognise that this always was and always will be Aboriginal land. See you next time on Fair Shake.